I'm far more enthusiastic about Charles Dickens's novel, and if it hadn't been for Priscilla looking so sad, Lana felt her first teaching hour in the new school was a success. "Priscilla, can you please wait behind?" The girl looked startled, but nodded. She came up to Lana's desk as the children filed out of the room, one or two looking back to see what Miss wanted with the strange older child in their class. "What is your next class?" Lana asked. "Needlework?"
"With Miss Booth?"
"Yes," Priscilla replied, her lower lip trembling.
"I hate needlework."
"So do I," Lana said with feeling. "We'll go to an empty classroom, but stay here and wait for me while I tell Miss Booth where you are."
"Do you really hate needlework?"
Priscilla asked when they were back in the empty classroom. She looked at Lana, doubt in her eyes. "Yes, I once had to make an apron. I was no good at it, and the teacher told me my stitches were too big and that I'd never make a seamstress." She looked at Priscilla and grinned. "I never told her it was the last thing I wanted to do. But I wish I could tell her now that I've improved a lot since the war started." Priscilla rewarded her with a slight smile.
"Sometimes we have to do things we don't want to," Lana continued, hearing her grandmother's voice. "Because when we grow up, there'll be all kinds of things we don't like. But in order to get on in the world, we have to grit our teeth and do them anyway."
Should she go on? Priscilla seemed to be listening.
"I noticed you weren't really enjoying the English class today."
"I can't think of anything except when Mummy and Daddy are coming for me."
Priscilla's eyes were wet as she pulled her pigtail.
"I try to learn everything in class, but I can't. When they take me home, I promise to get better marks."
Lana had to make a start.
"Priscilla, dear," she said gently, "they were killed by a motor car in the blackout. The driver couldn't put his lights on because of the regulations. It was an accident. Nobody's fault, but they're not coming back. Not ever. I'm so very sorry."
Dear God, she'd said it. Priscilla gave her a pained look, her eyes bright with unshed tears.
"Of course they are, Miss Ashwin. I don't know the exact date, that's all."
"Priscilla, listen to me."
Lana took the trembling child in her arms.
"It's terribly difficult to take in, but you must believe me."
Priscilla sniffed hard, but firmly extricated herself.
"May I please be excused?" she asked, jumping up.
She was out of the door before Lana could open her mouth. Lana followed, walking slowly, the gap widening between her and the hurrying child, as she returned to her office, wondering what step she should take next. Chapter 9. Back in her office, the telephone interrupted her train of thought. She picked up the receiver and Mrs. Dayton's voice said,
"Will you take a call from Mrs. Taylor, the matron of Bingham Hall?"
"Oh, yes, of course. Please, put her through." There was a pause. "Lana Ashwin speaking," she said.
"Oh, good, I've got you." A pleasant female voice came on. "It's Maxine Taylor, the matron just up the road from you. You've probably been told about Bingham Hall, the Dr. Bernardo's orphanage. The woman in the office said, as it was your first day, she didn't want to disturb you, but I rarely take no for an answer."
"That damnable woman." Lana bit her lip in annoyance.
"It is my first day," she said, "but I expect it to be a normal day, and I certainly don't consider anyone an interruption if they need to speak to me. What can I do for you, Mrs. Taylor?"
"We're planning to have a Maypole dance on May Day for the children, and I wondered if you and the teachers and any of your pupils would like to come along. I thought it would be easier to speak to you first."
Lana glanced at the desk calendar and flipped the page over to May.
"Ah, it's a Saturday," she said, "so no school." She paused. "It's very kind of you."
"Not at all," came the brisk but friendly tones. "I don't think the children here have mixed much with the village school children, but I think they should. Otherwise, they're going to view themselves as different for the rest of their lives, which isn't healthy, in my opinion."
I think it's a marvellous idea, Lana said with sincerity. I'd like to talk it over with the teachers first, so may I come back to you in a few days?
Yes, of course.
Lana hesitated. Before you go, Mrs. Taylor, there's something I'd like to ask you. It's about Priscilla Morgan. There was a pause at the other end.
Ah, Priscilla. She hasn't been with us long. A very sad case.
Yes. The worrying thing is that she can't come to terms with the accident. Both parents gone at once and she's lost her home as well. She told me she's waiting for them to come and fetch her. I'd tried to tell her as gently as I could that they were never coming back, but she was terribly upset and rushed off. It must be dreadful for her, and I'm not sure how I can help. I wondered how she was coping at the orphanage.
She's very quiet and very good, Mrs. Taylor said. Too good. It's not natural. I've tried to talk to her, we all have, but she won't listen. We're hoping time will be the healer.
Lana bit her lip. It was well over a year since she'd lost Dickie, and the ache was as strong as ever. But they were discussing Priscilla.
It might be a good idea for us to have a proper chat after the Maypole dance, Mrs. Taylor said. Another month will have passed, and we can assess the situation. How does she seem with the other children in class?
She sits away from the others, in her own world, mostly staring out of the window. Neither she nor the rest of the children take any notice of one another.
I wonder if she should see a doctor, the matron said in a thoughtful tone. I must admit, I'm as worried as you, especially as she's still eating very little at supper.
What about dinner time at the school? Does she...
There was a loud crackling on the line, and Lana couldn't hear the matron's next words.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch...
The line went dead. Lana thought of asking Mrs. Danvers to reconnect her, but couldn't face the secretary's sneering tone, as though she couldn't even take a simple telephone call. She spent the next 2 hours sick with guilt, wishing with all her heart she hadn't upset Priscilla. She should have got to know her better, gained her trust. Suddenly, it had become unbearably stuffy in her office. She switched off the 2 electric bars of the heater and threw on her jacket. A brisk walk would clear her head. Before the week was out, Lana felt at home at Bingham School. In the main, the children were good, though the boys were somewhat raucous when they thought they could get away with it, which had the effect of making the girls quieter. Except Josephine, a cheeky 10-year-old. She interrupted whenever she felt like it. More than once, Lana noticed Priscilla frowning at yet another interruption.
"Please put your hand up if you want to ask or answer a question," Lana said to Josephine. "Other children want to ask questions besides you." The girl immediately swung both arms in the air. Another child who craved attention.
"Only one hand is necessary," Lana said. "Keep the question in your head and I'll come back to you. I believe Martin put his hand up before you."
She nodded to Martin, but before he could open his mouth, Josephine said,
"No, I put my hand up first, miss."
"You will await your turn, Josephine, and you will address me by my name."
"I've forgotten it."
Josephine's tone was triumphant as she looked round at the class for approbation.
Fuming, Lana beckoned Josephine up to her desk to a class of sniggering children. She turned to the child.
"Now, Josephine, perhaps you would like to tell the class that you have a very poor memory and have already forgotten my name. And after class, you will write my name out 50 times on your slate before you go home. And I have 2 more slates you can use as extras, so there's no excuse the lines won't all fit."
Josephine tapped her shoe up and down as she boldly surveyed Lana.
"Shall I remind you of my name?" Lana said evenly. The child hesitated, as though about to say something insolent, but decided against it.
"No, miss."
"Then would you like to remind the class, in case anyone else has forgotten?"
"It's Miss Ashwin."
Josephine's chest rose with her breath.
"Miss Ashwin!
again!" Her voice rose to a shout as she faced the class.
Giggles from the girls and more sniggers from the boys.
"Very well," Lana said, putting a piece of chalk down by the blackboard. "That's enough. You may go back to your seat. And I don't want to hear another word from you until class tomorrow."
Josephine made her way to her desk, then glared at Lana.
"You never tell her off."
The child pointed to Priscilla.
"Prissy gets away with everything. She doesn't do her own work. She can't keep up with us in class, even though she's older than us. No one likes her here."
There was a deathly hush, and then a loud scraping of a chair by the window. Before she had time to stop her, Priscilla had sprung up, grabbed her satchel, and rushed out of the room.
"I hope you're satisfied now, Josephine," Lana said. "You will stay behind and explain yourself before you do your lines."
She threw a glance around the room. "We're finished for the day, children. You may go." She waited until the children had disappeared and only Josephine was left, standing sulkily beside the desk.
"Sit down in one of the front seats," Lana said, taking her chair and moving it nearer to Josephine. It was easier not having a desk as a barrier between them, she thought.
"Now then, what made you speak in such an unkind way about another pupil?"
Josephine sniffed. "Have you a handkerchief?"
"No, miss."
Lana dug in her bag and handed the girl a neatly folded one. She waited patiently.
"Well, Josephine?"
"No one likes Prissy. Only no one's brave enough to say it, except me."
"You mean Priscilla?"
"We all call her Prissy because she's such a fusspot. She tidies her desk after every lesson. We all know she's stupid because she's always bottom."
"No, she's not stupid. She's just a very sad little girl, and she needs help. I think you might be just the person."
"What do you mean? I don't even like her."
"Why not?"
"Because she thinks she's better than us, so she doesn't speak to us, so we do the same."
"It's not that at all," Lana said. "It's because she's embarrassed and angry with herself."
"Because she's stupid?"
"Don't say that word again, please," Lana said sharply. "She's not stupid." She looked at the girl. "Do you have a mother and father, Josephine?"
"Course I do."
"Then you're very lucky." One day, Priscilla had her own bedroom at home and a loving mother and father. The next, she was told they'd been killed in the blackout and she had to go and live at the orphanage down the road.
"It's extremely difficult for her, and you and the others are making it worse by not speaking to her or including her in your games. I want this to change."
All this time, Lana kept her focus on Josephine, who looked shocked and upset at the same time. "Can you understand what I'm saying, Josephine?" The girl hung her head.
"Josephine?" Josephine looked up, her eyes flashing. For a moment, Lana thought she was going to rebel against her.
"I didn't know, miss, about her mother and father."
"There's a war on, Josephine," Lana said gently. "Anything can happen at any time to those we love. Do you think you can be kinder to her?"
Josephine nodded. "And Priscilla's far from stupid. She's a clever girl. And I'm sure she would help you with your homework if you got stuck, especially your reading. Then maybe you can put your hand up for a part next time."
Josephine's face visibly brightened. "In the meantime," Lana continued, "tell her you will be her friend. Try to understand how she feels. Imagine it had happened to you and you'd lost your parents. You'd want to have a friend to talk to, wouldn't you?"
Josephine nodded, keeping her eyes averted. "And the first way to show her you mean it is to tell her you're very sorry for speaking the way you did."
There was a silence. Lana could almost see Josephine weighing everything up. Finally, she said,
"All right, Miss Ashwin, I'll tell her I'm sorry."
"Just one more thing, Josephine. We'll forget about writing out my name 50 times, but I'd like you to stand up in class tomorrow morning and tell the children what happened to Priscilla. I'll make sure she's not there. But tell them they must not mention it to her afterwards. She'd hate that. Just ask the others to include her, make friends with her, and above all, be kind." She paused to give time for her words to sink in. "What do you think?"
Josephine was looking at the floor.
"I'll do my best, Miss Ashwin," she muttered.
"Your best is exactly what I'm looking for," Lana said softly. Chapter 10 Josephine carried out Lana's instructions, but it only resolved the problem in that particular class. Lana could see Priscilla's mouth set as she went from one lesson to the next, not turning her head to look at anyone. When Lana spoke to Janet about it one evening, she realised the teacher hadn't changed her mind at all. "Of course I won't tolerate rudeness," Janice said, "but I just think we must give it time."
"I disagree," Lana said, "if we don't come out in the open so Priscilla knows we all know and can feel our concern, I can't see how she's ever going to overcome this tragedy."
"Children are quite resilient," Janice said. "Priscilla's quite strong underneath."
"Let's hope so."
She looked at Janice.
"Oh, I had a telephone call from Mrs. Taylor, the matron at the orphanage. She's invited our children to join in with their May Day celebrations. They're having a maypole and it sounded fun."
"It's the first time we've been invited," Janice said, sounding surprised.
"I suppose it's because they had that awful matron who hated everyone, but they sacked her and employed a much younger one a while ago. I was told she's having a baby, so this Mrs. Taylor must be taken over."
"She sounded awfully nice," Lana ventured. "What do you think?"
"You'll find most of the children will be at home with their families, as it's a Saturday," Janice said. "And I can't see Wendy, or me, come to that, wanting to spend the day at Bingham Hall on our day off.
One of us would have to be there to supervise our kids, and I'm not sure it's a good idea anyway, suddenly mixing the two lots of children. It would be far better to let the orphans have their celebration on their own without any added strain of strange children they're forced to play games with, particularly when it's on their special day."
"You're probably right," Lana said. "I didn't think of it that way."
In bed that night, Lana mulled over what Janice had said. She had to admit there was a good deal of sense in it, yet she still felt it was a good idea to get both sets of children talking to one another, that it was more natural than to keep them separated all day every day. But there was no harm in her wandering over to Bingham Hall on May Day. It would give her the chance to see how Priscilla was faring at the weekends. She would form a better picture of the child, and maybe Mrs. Taylor might have some suggestions as to how to help the young girl. Lana changed her mind once or twice as to whether she should venture over to Dr. Bernardo's on May Day. It would look strange, turning up with no children in tow. She decided to write Maxine Taylor a letter, explaining some of her concerns, but that she'd be pleased to meet her if it was convenient on that day. She received an answer 2 days later. "Dear Miss Ashwin, thank you for your letter, and I perfectly understand. You may well be right about mixing the children together on May Day. Perhaps some other time when we have a concert or a play, and we can invite some of the children from the school to be part of the audience. That said, I would be delighted to meet you. As you said, it could be useful where Priscilla Morgan is concerned, so why don't you wander over on May Day and see us in the afternoon, say 4 p.m. We should be packing up by then and more than ready for a tea break. If it's not convenient, give me a ring during the week and we'll make a firm arrangement. No need to reply. We'll see you when we see you. Yours sincerely, Maxine Taylor, Matron."
Chapter 11
Lana opened her bedroom curtains to a dull, drizzling first day of May. Not the best weather for dancing round the maypole. She quickly got ready and dressed in a dark pleated skirt and cream twin set. Gazing at her reflection, she wondered if it was too severe for a walk over to the orphanage to introduce herself to Maxine Taylor. The skirt swung around her knees as she turned this way and then the other. Oh dear, she wasn't sure. Did it make her look old before her time? With the rationing, her wardrobe was limited to clothes appropriate for a teacher, together with a couple of summer frocks and a Sunday best outfit. She shrugged. Most women were in the same boat. She spent the morning marking children's compositions, noting that Priscilla's was a couple of pages of short, jerky sentences with an occasional description of sudden brilliance. She was a child worth nurturing back to her full potential, Lana decided. She made herself a sandwich in the cottage, unusually quiet since Janice had gone to see her aunt for a couple of days. It was heaven to have the place to herself. She wouldn't stay at the orphanage for long this afternoon. Time on her own was too precious, and she wanted to make the most of every minute. Janice would be back tomorrow evening, ready for school again on Monday, and then there'd be no more peace. She sat and read a few chapters of her book, then looked at the clock. 3:15, much too early. But she could start slowly walking, maybe having a wander round the gardens, see how Priscilla was getting on. It would be good to get some air. She rose to her feet and washed her cup and saucer, then collected her raincoat from the peg in the hall. Lana enjoyed walking along the country lane, admiring the trees now in leaf. In spite of the dull sky, her heart lifted because she was actually here, beginning her new life. Yes, it was without Dickie, but she knew she'd be doing something important for the future, making sure the children were continuing their education no matter what Jerry threw at them. Dickie would have approved. She came to a small, neat sign, Bingham Hall, the orphanage. Strolling up the drive, she passed a cottage on the left, which looked as though it was going through some major repairs, and a little further on she saw several tall chimneys cutting through the clouds. She blinked. Built of red brick, the house had a turret to one side and a crenellated front, reminding her of a castle. She had to admit it was an imposing house. Well, more of a mansion, probably built in early Victorian times, the same as the village school. What would it be like to work there? Grim, she supposed. All those children, some of whose parents had probably been killed in the war, thrown together with no blood ties, maybe losing brothers and sisters as well. Lana was suddenly grateful to teach at a normal school. An orphanage could never represent home to her. She could hear an accordion playing and smiled. The children were obviously not letting the dreary rain put a dampener on their day. Screams of laughter became louder as she got nearer. Another sound, the purr of an expensive-sounding engine behind her. She pressed her back into one of the lime trees to give room to a large black motor car. It was moving slowly, crackling the gravel. Out of habit, as it drew parallel, she glanced inside. She was vaguely aware of two men in the back seat, but it was the blonde-haired man in the front passenger seat, masking the driver, that caught her gaze. He was only a few feet away, and she couldn't help looking at him. His eyes were fixed firmly ahead, his profile rigid. But she was struck by the power of his features, the well-shaped nose, the firm set of his jaw, and what she could see of his solemn mouth. As though he felt her eyes upon him, he turned to his left, and for long seconds he looked directly at her, through her. His eyes were deep-set, and she thought they were blue, but she couldn't be sure. A quiver ran along her spine. It was as though there was no rain-spotted window forming a barrier between them. He was more handsome than any man had a right to be. Telling herself not to be so silly, but more than a little embarrassed, she swung her gaze from his and fixed her eyes on the rear of the car. Yes, she was right. It was a Rolls. Her brothers hadn't wasted their time teaching her to recognise all the makes and models for nothing. Oh, what she would give to be behind its wheel. But what was a top-class motor car like that doing at an orphanage? She shrugged. It was none of her business. She saw the two men emerge from the back of the Rolls-Royce and walk towards the entrance of the house, leaving the driver and his front passenger in the car. Who were these men, arriving in such a grand car? More specifically, who was the blonde man? He must be someone important to have his own driver. Maybe he was a local dignitary. Yet he didn't look like a local man. Ah, perhaps he was a Dr. Bernardo's inspector. Though surely either position wouldn't warrant a driver and a Rolls. Two young women appeared at the front door of the orphanage, the taller woman wearing a smart navy dress. Lana wondered if she might be Maxine Taylor. One of the men said something, and the taller woman answered, but Lana was too far away to hear the words. The man loped off, and in the space of 2 minutes returned with the front passenger. The blonde man was exceptionally tall, even by hair standards, and unusually he was hatless. The sun, out for the first time that day, glinted on his hair. He looked like someone in command with his confident stride. He glanced once towards the children dancing round the maypole. The accompanying man almost had to run to keep up. It would have been amusing at any other time, but there was something unnerving in the scene unfolding in front of her. After several moments, the two women and three men disappeared into the house. Lana strolled over to where the children were playing, trying to shake off the image of the man who looked different from anyone around here, thinking she might ask where Priscilla was. She watched the children for a few minutes. They certainly looked well cared for, but their expressions wore a kind of resilience. She couldn't quite explain it, but it was as though they'd had to face more than most children, which of course was true. Maybe she was being fanciful, but she didn't think so. Two of the boys were watching her with open curiosity.
"Are you a new teacher, miss?"
one of them piped up. He looked to be about 9 or 10 with ginger hair. Lana smiled. "I'm the new headmistress at the village school. I've come to meet some of you, and matron."
"She's gone inside," the other boy said. "Some men came in that motor." He pointed. "It's a Rolls Royce," he added, the awe in his voice unmistakable. "Isn't it smashing?"
"Yes, it certainly is a beauty," Lana said with feeling. One day she'd have her own car, though maybe not a Rolls to start with, she thought, smiling to herself.
"I'm having one of them when I'm grown up," the ginger-haired boy said, a determined expression fixed on his freckled face.
"I'm sure you will, if you want it badly enough." He nodded.
"Have you seen Priscilla?"
"No, she's too toughy-nosed to play with us."
"I'm sure she doesn't mean to be," Lana said, surprised.
"I think she's shy,"
the boy grunted.
"She was helping cook last time I saw her."
He and his friend shot her another look, then dashed off.
So long as Priscilla was well cared for, Lana thought, though it was a pity she hadn't mixed with the others. It was only a tentative arrangement to see Maxine Taylor at 4 o'clock, but already it was coming up to that time. The matron would be busy at the moment. She'd have to wait until the meeting, or whatever it was over, and until then she'd wander around the gardens. No one seemed to be taking any notice as she walked over to the vegetable garden, where the gardener had erected wigwams of bean poles, ready for planting runner beans. A boy, bent nearly in two, struggled with a tough-looking weed. A little brown dog watched the boy's every move. The dog cocked his ear, then ran towards her, giving little whines of delight, his tail wagging excitedly. The boy stood up.
"Freddy, here, boy. Come here."
Freddy stopped in his tracks and looked round, uncertain as to what he should do, welcome the newcomer or obey his master.
"He's all right," Lana called,
swiftly closing the gap between them.
"Good boy."
She patted the dog's silky head.
"I have to keep watch on him," the boy said importantly. "He's only allowed here if he behaves. He used to live here, but he only comes to visit now."
"He's just like most dogs when someone new comes along. He wants to be friends." The boy looked at her directly with very blue eyes. Lana took in a quick breath. There was something about him, as though she'd seen him before. But that was ridiculous. She didn't know any of these children.
"Well, I know Freddy's name now, but I don't know yours."
The boy hesitated, and Lana had the feeling he didn't want to answer. But finally he said,
"Peter.
Peter Best."
"That's a good manly name," Lana smiled again,
but the boy didn't smile back. He looked much too serious for a child who couldn't be more than 9 or 10 years old. Dear, oh dear, these children must all have the most awful stories to tell, the way they lost their parents. The very idea made her feel sick at heart.
"I'll leave you to the weeding," she said. "I do hope I'll see you and Freddy again."
Peter nodded, but his expression was one of indifference. Lana decided it would be better if she saw the matron at a quieter moment,
But when she noticed a group of small girls playing Ring-a-Ring-a-Roses on the lawn, and a dark-haired woman, who she guessed was a teacher, keeping an eye on them, she thought she'd wander over and say hello. The woman turned her head at Lana's approach.
"Hello, I'm Lana Ashwin, the new headmistress at the village school." Lana extended her hand.
"Dolores Honeywell, I'm fairly new here too, and pleased to meet you." She smiled at Lana. "I saw you and wondered who you were."
"Mrs. Taylor invited me over to meet some of the children," Lana said. "I was looking for Priscilla, really."
"Well, there's Matron." Miss Honeywell motioned towards the front door. "She's with Mrs. Andrews, or June, as she was known, who used to be the matron before she married. But I don't know who that tall, fair-haired man is." She paused.
"Oh, he's going over to the greenhouses. Wonder why?
He doesn't strike me as a gardener."
Dolores Honeywell turned her attention back to the children. Lana watched as the blonde man walked slowly over to the vegetable plots where she'd left Peter and Freddy just a short while ago. She thought she heard someone whistling. From where she stood, she couldn't see the boy clearly, but she saw him standing very still, his back to the man. Then, to her astonishment, he whirled round and she heard him shout, "Papa!" and hurl himself into the stranger's arms.
Peter's father?
The tall man held the boy tightly and kissed the top of his head. Lana couldn't take her eyes off the two of them. Bingham Hall was an orphanage, yet it seemed as though Peter had unexpectedly been reunited with his father. She felt the tears prick and turned away, not wanting to encroach on their private moment. This wasn't at all the right time to speak to Maxine Taylor, who'd probably had no idea at all that these gentlemen would be turning up when she'd suggested Lana go over to introduce herself around tea time. She'd leave quietly and telephone the matron in the morning to apologise and make a firm appointment next time. She slipped amongst the trees lining the drive, the children's shouts and squeals of laughter sounding far away now, and made her way back to the school. The image of the tall, blonde man gathering his son close to his chest still sharp in her mind. She wiped a tear away with the back of her hand and smiled to herself for being so sentimental. But somehow it was comforting to know that in this interminable, cruel war, the scene that had unfolded in front of her looked as though it had all the elements of a happy ending. But there was no happy ending for Priscilla, Lana thought sadly, as she turned the key to open the cottage door, imagining the young girl in her mind's eye watching such a reunion. Lana put the kettle on, feeling a little light-headed as she remembered the way the blonde man's eyes had held hers. Why had he made such an impact? She drank her tea without tasting it. Chapter 12. May Day, that night.
"Put the torch out," she hissed. "That's no good. I can't see a bleeding thing now."
The youth switched the torch back on.
"Well, put your hands over it."
"So hear you. You think Jerry was flying overhead looking down at us?"
"You never know."
The girl gave a nervous giggle. The two of them crept up the drive, the gravel crackling underfoot at every step.
"Go on, then. I dare you."
She dug the youth in the ribs.
"I'll keep watch, but they'll all be asleep."
The youth stretched his neck to assess the open window on the first floor of Bingham Hall. Then he twisted round to her.
"What you bet?" "A shilling."
"Nah, it's not worth it."
He sniffed and wiped his sleeve across his nose.
"I don't know, though. Maybe it is. It'll buy a packet of fags."
"Go on, then."
The girl's eyes blazed with the intensity of her bet.
"There's a drain pipe next to the window."
The youth nodded and shinned up it without making a sound. He stuck his hand in the gap and pushed the sash up to make enough space to crawl through.
"You come in."
His harsh voice reverberated around the walls of the building.
"Shh."
The girl put her finger to her lips.
"Go in and unbolt the kitchen door near where I'm standing."
The youth raised his thumb and disappeared through the opening. 2 minutes later, he had the door open and the girl slipped through like a shadow. They were in.
"Look at the size of this kitchen."
"That's nothing,"
the girl said, taking his arm and leading him along a short corridor into the great hall.
This is something.
The youth's eyes almost swiveled in their sockets as he took in the vaulted ceiling, the massive stone fireplace, and the chandeliers and sconces, unlit now because of the blackout as well as the late hour. His eyes roamed the walls of oil paintings, mostly portraits, and what looked like hundreds of coats of arms and the solid oak furniture. He turned to her and gave a low whistle.
The knobs know how to live, don't they?
The girl pulled a face.
There might have been knobs in them days, but Lord Bingham and his family did a runner when the war started.
Who told you that?
The youth narrowed his eyes at her.
I used to work here, didn't I?
The girl said.
I got ears. You hear things when you work here.
He threw a look of disbelief that she could have landed such a job.
What did you do?
I looked after the special children,
the girl said proudly, as she led him along the corridor to the magnificent library.
Well, I did, until that bitch nurse reported me.
You weren't crafty enough. You should have hung on to your job.
He stared at her.
Chance to pinch all kinds of stuff and they'd never notice.
He stared at her.
What'd she report you about, anyways?
I told them we got a Nazi kid amongst us and we should get rid of him.
How'd you know that?
I saw a photo of his German pa in his uniform, didn't I?
A satisfied smirk curled her lips.
I might not be a clever clogs, but I know a swastika when I see one.
His jacket was full of them.
I was the only one who dared speak out and got the sack for me trouble.
Phew. The youth blew his cheeks out. You never know what goes on in these places, do you?
The pair padded up the main staircase in their rubber-soled shoes.
What's that room?
He nodded towards an open door.
Where the kids paint?
He pushed it open with his foot and looked around at the childish paintings pinned on the walls.
I always fancied doing a bit of painting myself, he said, but never got the chance.
Maybe you would, if you hadn't been expelled so many times.
He grinned, then took a piece of thin paper from his pocket and poked some tobacco onto it. With a practiced movement, he rolled it and licked the ends together with a large red tongue and stuck it between his heavy lips.
I don't think you ought to do that, the girl said, her expression suddenly anxious. Someone might smell it and think the place is on fire and will be caught and punished.
Don't be daft.
He struck a match and lit it.
I mean it, Billy. Put it out. It's too dangerous.
She blinked and waved the smoke away from her face.
Oh, all right, just give me a few puffs.
He inhaled deeply and blew out a long stream of smoke.
Billy!
Stop nagging, Elle, for Christ's sakes.
He took one more drag, gave the roll up a cursory stub on the edge of the Belfast sink, and tossed the still glowing stub into the waste paper basket.
Chapter 13.
Lana struggled to wake up.
Bells?
The village church bells. She cocked her head to listen, then threw back the covers and leapt out of bed.
There it was again.
Impossible. Mr. Churchill had ordered all church bells to stop unless...
Dear God, not the invasion.
She flew to the window and saw two fire engines screaming past in the opposite direction to the village. They were headed for Bingham Hall.
Dear Lord, had the Germans bombed an orphanage this time? Innocent sleeping children and those who looked after them. Priscilla, Peter, that nice-sounding Maxine Taylor.
Feeling sick, she swiftly dressed and hammered on Janice's door. No answer. She opened it. Janice was snoring away, as usual. Should she wake her? They would need all the help they could get. She shook the woman's shoulder.
Janice, wake up. There's a fire at the orphanage. I've just seen the fire engines.
The sleeping figure moved a fraction.
Janice, there's a fire at Bingham Hall.
What?
What are you...
Janice sat up, her eyes wide.
I'm going to see if I can help. Will you come with me?
You're ready.
You go and I'll follow.
Lana ran, her long legs flying as she drew level with others who must have heard the alarm. A dull pain already throbbed in her side. By the time she reached the drive of Bingham Hall, she had to stop and catch her breath, or she'd never make it up the slope. She looked towards the house and saw flames shooting into the night sky. But there'd been no siren, no explosion, no bomb. She was sure she'd have heard it if there had. Eyes watering from the smoke already wafting towards her, Lana hurried up the hill to where a crowd of people and children had already gathered, their faces lifted towards the sky, which was an eerie red. She was near enough now to hear the snapping and cracking of the blaze. Children screamed and cried over shouting adults. Her eyes began to sting badly, and her nose filled with smoke. Firemen were pointing their hoses onto the east side of the building where the flames had taken hold, the water pouring in jets onto the building. She spotted a woman who was urging a group of youngsters further away. Lana stumbled towards her in the dark and tapped her on the shoulder. The woman whirled round, and Lana saw it was the teacher she'd spoken to at the May Day event.
"What a disaster!" Dolores Honeywell's face was blotchy, and her eyes were running from the smoke. "What can I do? Keep an eye on these kids while I try to find out if the children are all here."
Before Lana could answer, Dolores had rushed towards the group of firemen.
"Do you know if everyone's out of the building?" Lana asked an older boy.
"No telling," he answered, his streaming eyes fixed on Bingham Hall.
She couldn't blame him. He was watching his home go up in smoke.
"What's your name?"
He turned.
"Alan."
"Alan, can I trust you to keep these boys in check? I'm the new headmistress at the village school." The boy nodded. The boys, eight of them, she counted, were all talking and pointing. One was crying.
"Alan's going to look after you for a few minutes," she told them. "Please wait here with him until I or one of the other grown-ups come back. Do not leave this spot. You'll be in the way of the firemen who are trying to do their job."
She gave as stern a look as she dared without frightening them any further. "Do you understand?"
"Yes, miss," they chorused.
The little boy who was crying stopped and looked at her with fearful eyes.
These innocent children, as if the war and bombing wasn't bad enough.
She put her arm around him.
"It's all right," she said. "Alan is here to look after you."
The others began talking, and she stopped them with her hand in the air. "And if Alan tells you to move somewhere else for safety, you are to obey him. Is that clear?" They nodded, and she could only pray that Alan would keep them in order as she made her way running and stumbling over the uneven grass towards Bingham Hall. She had to speak to one of the firemen, find out what was happening. If anyone... Oh, dear God, don't let there be anyone still trapped.
"Excuse me,"
she said to the nearest fireman, who was concentrating on pointing his hose on another fire that had taken hold in a different spot.
"Stand back, miss."
"Is anyone still in the building?"
"We don't know. One of our chaps has gone in. The matron's trying to get all the names."
He jerked his head over his right shoulder, and she saw a tallish woman with a large group of children around her. Lana sped over in the direction the fireman pointed.
"Mrs. Taylor! Matron!" she called in the distance between them.
The woman glanced in her direction.
"I'm Lana Ashwin from the school," Lana breathed harshly as she rushed up.
The matron nodded as though in a trance.
"Can I do anything? Is everyone safe?"
Maxine Taylor's voice was shaking as she answered.
"All the boys are out," she said, "and the girls, except one, Priscilla Morgan. No one's seen her."
"Oh, no.
Not Priscilla." Lana's heart clenched in fear. "The firemen barred my way," Maxine said thickly. "They refused to let me go in." She seemed to gather her wits as she shouted to someone, "Charlie, please help with these children. I must make sure everyone's out."
Maxine rushed off, Lana running behind. Moments later, she saw the matron trip on a fallen branch. A moan of pain sliced through the air. Lana flew over the grass.
"My ankle!" Maxine screwed up her eyes in pain. "It's not broken, but it hurts like mad. Just a bad twist."
"Let me see." Another figure ran to the matron's side.
"Oh, Dolores, thank goodness it's you. I've gone and sprained my ankle."
"See if you can get up," Dolores said. "Here, give me your hand."
"Priscilla," Maxine began.
"Don't worry, I'll find her," Lana said, touching Maxine briefly on the shoulder before dashing over to the home.
"You're not allowed to go in there, miss," one of the firemen shouted. "It's not safe.
You're not properly equipped.
Without answering, Lana heaved the front door open and shot inside, her only thought for the young girl. The heat made her reel back, choking. Pulling her scarf over her nose, which immediately made her feel she was suffocating, she pushed further inside and shouted up the stairs. Flames were already crackling from the first floor landing.
Is anyone there?
A silence.
Priscilla! Are you there?
She waited seconds, then bellowed,
Priscilla! Help!
It was barely a whimper, but she heard it. She raced up the stairs, hardly aware of the fire, as she shouted, I'm coming! Her head snapped this way and that.
Where are you, Priscilla?
Up here.
Heart in her mouth, Lana started up the second flight, but the flames were bursting around her. She'd be trapped. She'd have to turn back. But she couldn't. There was a child. She coughed, and a slick of black spittle burst from her mouth.
Priscilla!
To her joy, she saw a white face over the banister of the second floor, and then it disappeared. A scream made her blood run cold. Within seconds, she'd reached the girl who'd crumpled into a heap.
Priscilla, it's me, Miss Ashwin from the school. Can you get up?
No.
Please try. We have to get out of the building. The fire is spreading.
She put her arms around the child's waist and hoisted her to her feet.
Come on, love. I'm here. We can do it together. Hold on to me.
She turned towards the stairs, but to her horror, the flames had hold of the staircase. She recoiled, banging her hand against one of the door jambs.
Where's the fire escape?
Priscilla jerked her head. Lana grabbed her hand.
Go!
Priscilla ran a short distance down a corridor, then froze.
I can't,
she wailed.
Oh, dear God. The child was in shock. She couldn't remember where it was.
Heart feeling as though it were about to burst from her chest, Lana tore her scarf from her neck, wrapped it around her hand, and seized the nearest door handle. She pulled Priscilla in, then kicked the door shut behind them. Thank the Lord there were no flames in this room, but it was full of smoke. She tripped over something solid in her path as she rushed to the window in her effort to open the sash. Straining every sinew, she managed to push up the pane of glass and heard men's voices shouting outside.
Thank God for the air.
She gulped in a few breaths and bellowed,
Help! Help!
Oh, the relief, when one of them looked up in her direction.
I see you, a man's voice shouted. Anyone else with you?
A girl, Priscilla Morgan. Matron's looking for her.
Is she all right?
I think so.
He raised a thumb. Hold tight, love. Lads are coming. Be up in a jiffy.
Come and get some air, Priscilla. One of the firemen is going to get us down.
For a moment there was no reply. Then a scream pierced her eardrums, making her blood curdle. She swung round in time to see Priscilla, only a few feet away.
Priscilla, what?
The girl turned to her and pointed.
Miss, it's...
She broke off. Her eyes were wide.
There's a...
Let me see. Priscilla stood aside, her hand covering her mouth as though to stifle another scream. Lana recoiled. What she'd almost tripped up on was a figure lying on his back, his bloodied eyes staring at the ceiling. He must have been trying to open the window but collapsed from the smoke. She put her face to his chest, nothing. She felt for his hand, turned it so the inside of his wrist was towards her. She put her three fingers on his pulse as she'd been trained at one of her St. John Ambulance training classes. There was no flicker of life. A youth, too young to be called up. Smoke and tears stung her eyes.
Is he dead?
I'm afraid he is, Priscilla. Don't look any more. It was an accident. Smoke was curling under the crack of the door. Her heart beat hard.
Please hurry. Oh, please hurry. We're going to be all right, Priscilla, she said as she pulled the silent child into her arms.
Priscilla's eyes were unfocused, wide with terror.
The fireman has seen us, and he's going to rescue us. He'll be here very soon.
She heard more shouts, more like orders, and hardly before she'd finished speaking, a man's face appeared at the window, his fireman's helmet glinting in the moonlight. She pulled Priscilla away, allowing him to haul himself through the gap.
Thank God you've got the child. We knew there was one missing.
He looked at the terrified girl.
You Priscilla, love?
Priscilla nodded.
Either of you hurt?
She needs to be checked for burns. She's been in the building longer than anyone, Lana said, trying not to show how worried she was in front of Priscilla, who was clinging onto her arm and crying softly.
More smoke was seeping under the door.
I'm afraid you'll have to go out the way I came in, the fireman said, but don't worry, you'll be all right.
Lana couldn't look at him. If she had, he would have seen in an instant how terrified she was.
There's a body over there, she pointed. I'm pretty certain he's dead.
The fireman felt for the youth's pulse and nodded.
I'm afraid you're right. Let's get you out first before the fire bursts in. I'll take care of the lad. You go first, love, then the girl. I'll follow behind. There'll be a fireman at the bottom of the ladder holding it steady, and one will come up the ladder right behind you. And the girl, when it's her turn, so we don't have any accidents. Turn round and go down backwards. Don't look down. It'll be all right. We're only two stories up.
Lana's stomach turned over with fright. She was petrified of heights. It was no good the firemen telling her they weren't very high up. But she had to keep level-headed in front of Priscilla. She mustn't show any fear. She nodded. Get it over with. The sooner the better.
Priscilla, I'm going first down the ladder, then you, and then a fireman who'll be close behind you, and our nice fireman in front. They'll make sure you're safe. Is that clear?
Yes.
A whimper.
There'll be another fireman at the bottom of the ladder. Just take your time. Don't rush. Just watch me, and then you follow.
Lana peered out of the window and could make out two figures at the bottom of the ladder. The fireman took her arm and helped her through the window into the cold night air. Gingerly, she put one foot behind her on the ladder. She kept her eyes glued on the brick facade in front of her as her feet almost automatically felt for the next rung. She sensed the figure of a man right behind her. Then before she realised, a fireman's comforting hand was helping her on the final step. She was down. Anxiously, she tilted her head upwards to see the fireman easing Priscilla through the window. The girl clung onto the ladder with both hands. The fireman, his arms stretched, holding her steady. She put her foot backwards just as Lana had done, but it slipped through the gap between the rungs. Her foot dangling in mid-air, the child let out a piercing scream, but the fireman behind her practically cradled her as he guided her down, step by slow step. Before she reached the ground, he had pulled Priscilla off the ladder and into his arms, then carried her over to a patch of grass and gently set her down. Somebody turned up with a blanket and draped it round Priscilla's huddled form. "She's in shock," the fireman said to Lana under his breath. "Stay with her. The ambulance should be here any minute and she ought to go to hospital. Have her lungs checked as well as any other burns. She's got a burn on her arm, but it doesn't look too bad." He glanced at Lana. "Are you all right, miss?"
I think so.
Lana's voice seemed to her to come from a long way away, as though she were in a dream. She coughed and her throat itself seemed on fire. She looked towards the building.
Did anyone fetch that poor young man?
One of our chaps got him out, but it was too late.
You knew that, didn't you?
Lana bit her lip and nodded.
Is the fire out now?
More or less, he said. We're just checking. It's the far wing with the most damage.
He looked at her. Are you one of the teachers?
Not here, Lana said. I'm the new headmistress of the village school, but I heard the fire engines, so I thought I'd run over and see if there was anything I could do to help.
Well, although you ignored our instructions to steer clear, I have to admit you've certainly done your bit, young lady, he said, grinning. This young'un might not have been in quite such good shape without your actions.
It was nothing anyone else wouldn't have done, Lana said, shivering now it was over.
She put her arms round Priscilla, who was visibly shaking.
Well done, Priscilla.
There was no response. Are you all right, love? Wordlessly, the girl nodded, her face as pale as the moon.
They're going to take you to hospital to have a look at your arm. She hesitated. Priscilla, why were you the last one to leave? All the other children were out except you.
Priscilla's mouth tightened, as though she was afraid of what she might say. Why? Lana wondered. Had the child slept through it? If so, why hadn't one of the other children woken her? It didn't make sense. And how had the others escaped? Some of them were so young they wouldn't know how to use the fire escape. Someone must have shown them where it was and what to do, and then it dawned on her.
Priscilla, love, were you helping the others get out?
Priscilla blinked.
Miss Ashwin, is that you?
Lana turned to see Maxine Taylor, half running, half hopping across the grass towards them. Oh, thank goodness the matron was back on her feet.
Oh, thank heavens you're safe, Priscilla.
She bent and touched the girl's shoulder, but Priscilla stayed rigid. The woman stood and held out her hand to Lana.
Not the best timing for our meeting, but I can't thank you enough.
She lowered her voice.
We were worried out of our minds that Priscilla had fallen or hadn't got out, but the firemen wouldn't let us through. They said one of them was going to check in case anyone was still there. How did you get in?
When no one was looking, Lana said. Is everyone accounted for now?
Yes, every child and staff member. We're just waiting for the ambulance.
Lana turned her back to Priscilla and gestured for the matron to come round to the other side so they wouldn't be overheard.
There was someone else in the dormitory where Priscilla and I were, she said. Oh, no. Maxine Taylor put her hands to her face. Who? We've counted everyone.
A man? Hardly more than a boy, really.
Is he injured?
I'm afraid he's dead. Maxine Taylor put her hand to her face.
Oh, God. How awful.
He must have been overcome with the smoke. Another horrible shot for Priscilla, poor girl, as she discovered him. She needs to be checked over because she was in the building the longest.
Yes, of course.
Maxine Taylor cocked her head.
Thank heavens, the ambulance. We've got two other children who need checking as well as Priscilla.
She looked at Lana.
It wouldn't hurt you to go as well, Miss Ashwin. It must have been awful in there, feeling you were trapped.
Lana shook her head to discourage the matron from saying any more in front of Priscilla, who had started to cry again.
Don't leave me, Miss Ashwin, she sobbed. I thought we were going to burn to death.
Of course we weren't, love, Lana said, stroking the girl's hair.
We had that nice fireman helping us, and I'm not leaving you. I'm coming with you to the hospital, and then you'll be in your bed before you know it. Sleep will be the best thing for you. I'm not going back inside that place, ever, Priscilla said, jerking her head towards the house, her eyes wet with tears.
Shush, shush, shush. Lana turned to Maxine.
Mrs. Taylor, do call me Maxine, and you're Lana.
Maxine, is it all right with you if I take Priscilla to the hospital?